aligned. And that to me is the sign of an organisation that's got a bottomless pit of ambition, and ambition for its patients, ambition to realise the best for the patients. And, you know, I see that in droves every single day that I work, and that keeps me going.
Hello and welcome to the Make an Impact podcast with Heidi Fisher and today's guest, Dr. Linda Harris, founding chief executive of Spectrum Community Healthcare, a community interest company. Spectrum celebrated its 12th anniversary as Heidi recorded this interview with Linda, and Linda is clear and candid about her and the organisation's biggest learnings over the last 12 years. There's so much to unpack, unpick within here, and lots of lessons for leaders and anyone working to create impact, particularly in health, but outside that too. Why is growth good if you create impact? And if so, how do you balance impact and growth? How do you attract and retain high-quality team members? What makes Spectrum's delivery so effective? Why is it so fundamental to communicate impact internally as well as to an external audience? How is Spectrum addressing the growing health inequalities gap? What a maturing organisation needs to let go of and what it must start to embrace? And we have reflections on AI and its use within impact and healthcare. Let's hear from Linda now.
Hi, Linda. I'm so pleased that you've been able to join me on my podcast today. Do you want to just introduce yourself to everyone that's listening, please?
Thanks, Heidi. It's a privilege. My name's Linda Harris. I'm a GP by background, and I have the responsibility for leading an organisation called Spectrum Community Health. We've been going for about 12 years now, and our focus, the focus of our efforts is quality interventions for people in vulnerable circumstances. And I've been I'm the founding chief exec there.
Wow. So that sounds like a fabulous organisation, Spectrum Community Healthcare. When you say you do work with vulnerable communities and groups, do you want to just explain a little bit more about what that kind of work actually is?
Yeah, well, I kind of, as you were asking the question, it takes me back, actually, and it feels like yesterday, too, because we've literally just almost turned 12. I always get hairs standing up on the back of my neck on April the 1st, because it just feels, as I say, like yesterday when we took the brave step to start out. And we had the one contract then, which had three component parts. It had healthcare for people in prisons. And they were Newhall and Wakefield prisons, actually, in the Wakefield district. We had a team of very committed clinicians delivering sexual health care in community. And we also had a team of committed clinicians providing community substance misuse. And to this day, those continue to be our core markets and our core populations of interest. It's just that our geography has just expanded across the north of England. So we have a large number of teams now spanning across the north of England, but always focused on those three core populations.
Well, they're pretty, I would say, heavy issues in terms of those three core areas. Was there any particular reason for choosing them, or is it just how it happened to be at the time?
Yeah, I do sometimes wonder. I also often think I've got a bit of imposter syndrome myself, actually, but I do sometimes wonder how much is good quality leadership and planning and how much is serendipity and luck. But there's probably a balance to be struck. I have a personal interest in individuals in vulnerable circumstances, and my own journey as a clinician took me into those particular fields. And there is a huge relationship, I think, between individuals who find themselves on the wrong side of the law, possibly getting into trouble with substances. There's a high percentage of the population who've been traumatized themselves in their life or have fallen into drugs and alcohol. And sexual health, although in many ways sexual health care treatment can be seen as sort of mainstream primary and community care, there is a vulnerability within that population, whether those individuals have HIV or individuals who, for one reason or another, find themselves perhaps as a teenage pregnancy or the victims of sexual assault. So there's a golden thread for me in these populations around trauma, There's a golden thread in relation to attracting individuals, talented practitioners, clinicians, and corporate staff that want to face into those populations, come together and make a difference. And I think Spectrum's vision and mission is to pull those two, or pull those golden threads together, and just deliver excellence and quality without compromise.
Just going to pause there for a moment to let that bit sink in for everyone that's listening. You've mentioned there, you know, it's about the people that want to work in these areas, and they deliver excellence. And then obviously working within trauma, what does it look like in terms of actual delivery? How is your delivery special or different, or, you know, what makes it effective essentially?
That's a really, really great question, because it's really important when you're part of the health and care family to realize that actually everybody who delivers health and care gets out of bed to make a difference. That's pretty fundamental. But what sets you apart, or how can you be set apart? And some of this is actually wrapped up in our current strategy as a business, actually. So it gives me an opportunity maybe to share, and none of it's rocket science, really. So I'm really happy to, you know, enter into a conversation. For us in these very challenging post-COVID times, it's about what are the component parts of becoming an employer of choice. So how can we attract individuals, whether it's how we invest in their health and well-being, whether it's what we are articulate as our offer to invest in their professional development, and also how we run our systems and processes, people can actually execute their frontline delivery without getting tied up in knots with systems and processes that don't work. And I'm not suggesting that we get everything right, but we definitely want to be, you know, a solid employer of choice, because we know our staff working on the front line every day are facing challenges themselves. We want to make life as easy as possible, but as productive and as rewarding as possible. And the second component of that sort of psychological contract between us as an organization and the talented individuals we want to attract and retain is about excellence in care. And I talk about quality without compromise. And for us, we're a CQC regulated provider. So, you know, to be aspiring to be good or outstanding in everything we do, that's kind of our benchmark bottom line. But then what is it that's going to enable people to go from good to great, to enable people to come out of a regulated a CQC visit with something that they can be proud of, including the things that don't go so well sometimes, because we are ever going to be learning lessons. There's never going to be a day when we don't get something completely right, but it's what we do with that information and how we pick ourselves up, or how we kind of reflect and take it forward. And that to me is the sign of an organization that's got a bottomless pit of ambition, and ambition for its patients, ambition to realize the best for the patients. And, you know, I see that in droves every single day that I work, and that keeps me going. And what I try to do, everyone's a leader in Spectrum, is get people to unlock that bit and to be generous in sharing their experience in that. And then last but not least, the third part of our component strategy is about our growth. And growth's not an option when you're a social enterprise, as we know. It's got to be measured growth. It's got to be, and it's something that, you know, can sometimes be felt as a bit of a distraction. Why have we got to grow? Why can't we just consolidate? But actually, we've always got to be thinking about taking the business to the next level for two reasons. One is because actually, if we believe in what we do, why would we not want to grow that and deliver that in more places for more people? As long as what we're delivering has integrity and it's not in any way going to be compromised by that growth. So that question, in a long-winded way, I think is best answered by the focus of our strategy at this current time.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of work has gone into your strategy development there, a lot of thought and thinking. I've recently been talking a bit about balancing impact and growth, and kind of get that balance right. Do you find that that's something that you're ever having to do in your role, is like, you know, we want to make impact, people want to grow, but we don't want to grow without impact. How do you manage that?
Yeah, I think it's probably one of my biggest challenges, I think, is getting this right. So as a social value business, as a not-for-profit, we have to stand on our own two feet. So we're always planning and hoping that we will generate a healthy enough surplus to enable us to reinvest. And a significant amount of that reinvestment is, in this day and age, transformative. So how can we transform our current contracts so that they're delivering on the money efficiently, leanly, effectively? And then what have we got left to horizon scan, to invest, to grow? And that is the balancing act, because, you know, there is no more low-hanging fruit in any businesses now to help create efficiencies. There really, really isn't. And I empathize with frontline staff when I go out to them and have a conversation about what can we do more innovatively, more leanly, when people have really got foot to floor. It's fascinating at the moment when we see digitization coming in and we work and we start to see a step change. Is there something within the relationship between our philosophy of care and how we can use digital innovation to make life safer, easier for frontline staff, not to replace their gifts and their talents, but actually create seamless and effective systems and processes? So there's certainly something in that area that I'm sure I'm not alone in wanting to explore in a deeper way. But you're absolutely right. Balancing the generation of surplus to invest, to horizon scan, versus the business as usual, keeping a customer, and when I say the customer, obviously our commissioner, happy, but never compromising on health. And one of the things that we've noticed in the post-pandemic world is the increase in demand, of course, the greater complexity of presentation, particularly amongst vulnerable groups, and sadly, and it is with a heavy heart, the widening of the health inequalities gap, something which I must say, when I started this journey 12 years ago, and Spectrum is all about contributing to reducing that health inequality gap. Sadly, we know the evidence suggests that's not the case. And we've got to think ever harder, smarter, and work ever more cuter to try and address that.
Yeah, it's a difficult thing. I think the health inequalities are, you know, it's ambitious to want to reduce health inequalities, because there's so many different factors impacting on them. So yeah, it's not an easy area to be working in. I don't envy you at all. I much prefer doing the impact measurement of it and saying, yeah, this is what you've actually achieved towards reducing health inequalities. It's much easier.
Although, you know, don't underestimate, and we've worked over many years, I don't underestimate the opportunity that replaying and reflecting that back to busy frontline professionals, so they can take a pause and go, actually, look at what the added value is. And that never is to be underestimated, and we perhaps don't do enough of it.
Yeah, definitely not. It's I think one of the key things is around communicating impact, and most people, that they immediately think about the external stakeholders, so like the commissioners, the investors, etc. But actually the fundamental people that need the communication around impact are the people that are delivering it, because they need to not necessarily always celebrate, because some of the impacts might not be as great as what you plan, but they can then do the learning from it, which you've talked about. So nicely into the next question there, what would you say your biggest learnings have been over the last 12 years? It was like, this is where the truth comes out.
Really, it does, yeah. Okay. I'll start somewhere, isn't it, to get this going. So I'll start with something that's really real and present that I'm grappling with at the moment as a leader. So I often talk about Spectrum's journey like the birth of a child, we went through a neonatal phase, and it's a bit like when you are a small child right up to toddlerhood, you can get away with murder, can't you? People think you're lovable, cute, and they want to work with you. And and then there comes a phase, doesn't it, when you move into adolescence. And adolescence is a frisky time. You're working out who you are, what's your identity, and hopefully you come out the other end being really clear about what it is that you're going to be as an adult. And I feel that we are in adulthood now. And adulthood comes with it with responsibility. And it's a little bit more serious time, isn't it? You've got to grow into your adulthood. And so there are some things that you have to lose and let go of that are probably associated with the youthfulness. And there are things that you have to embrace, which are also equally exciting and bring reward. So one of the learning that we're doing at the moment is how we grow into adulthood, which for us as a healthcare provider, and albeit a healthcare provider of quite risky areas of work across a broad geography, is to ensure that we get our governance right. It's really important that we have strong corporate governance. In order to do this well, I think, as a leadership team, we need to be really open to this. It's always hard, I think, and particularly possibly harder as you get longer into your tenure, to take a step back and shine a mirror up and be really brutally honest about what is and isn't working well. And I feel part of our journey into adulthood and making sure we absolutely don't let anyone out, least of all our beneficiaries, is that we get our governance right. And so sometimes letting go of things that were part and parcel of your DNA and were very much an important part of the startup process of the business, establishing yourself, including your identity. Maybe, like all adults, we have to sometimes let go of certain things. So that's a key learning point that's come to my mind now. The other things are probably more granular and but I'm very happy to share because they relate possibly specifically to the line of business we do. And certainly when I look at some of the, I call them problem children, but we all have problem children, don't we? Areas, nooks and crannies of the business that we think haven't quite got to where we want them to be. And when I think back as to why, you know, you get an area or nook and cranny that just doesn't deliver in the way you want it to, you know, what are the causes of the causes? And sometimes I've come to the conclusion that, and it might be down to business naivety or just not making the right decisions, or perhaps not pushing for something as vociferously as I wish I had. And certainly there are certainly some areas where if I look back, certain things I could have done very differently might have made a difference to outcomes further down the line. And then finally, I'll just share something that probably feels quite basic, really. But one of the things that we have the pleasure of doing as a social enterprise that is looking to grow in areas where we think we can make a difference is we get the privilege of mobilising new teams and services. And I've recently done a mobilisation where I was given some really good advice to develop something called assumptions logs, which is something I hadn't used before. I'm really familiar with risk logs and issues logs, and have those coming out of my ears for England. But assumptions logs is something that I hadn't previously used, and I used it for a recent mobilisation to flush out things that we assume are going to go well. And it's really important to assume things that we think you're going to go right, as well as things that aren't going to go right, and just use them as a bit of a compass for developing risk. So I'll share that because I found them incredibly useful.
Wow. It sounds like there's been a lot of learnings, and I love the analogy between the baby and into adulthood. I can completely relate to that. My children are 4 and 8 at the moment, so yeah, I'm glad they're not in the baby stage anymore.
they can't get away with as much as they get into adulthood, or they grow.
No, but they sometimes think they're adults already. when they're not quite ready. Definitely. So I'm curious, what made you want to be the founding CEO of Spectrum? You know, 12 years ago, were you sat there thinking, I'm looking for a new opportunity, or did it just was it one of those things that just happened?
Yeah, it probably more the latter, actually. My professional journey, you know, general practice, interested in public health and population health, that's fundamental to, I suppose, the core role that I had, developing a special area of interest, which for me was drug and alcohol treatment, and then being introduced into prison health. So actually the relationship I have with the core beneficiaries of the organisation very much aligned with my own professional journey. The right to request, which is quite a historical model now, which was part of the Lord Darcy reforms in health and care, felt like a natural vehicle for myself and actually a group of individuals I was working with at the time. Felt like a really solid evidence-based vehicle with which to provide some additional added value for a population that they're, we had a hunch, and in fact the evidence suggests perhaps could do well by a social enterprise model. So the actual ability to take a lead and establish the company and become the chief exec fell out of that, actually. It's good old-fashioned form follows function rather than an innate desire to become a chief exec.
That's interesting. I think that you're one of the perhaps more unusual ones, because usually they're like, I felt called to do this.
Nope, I certainly didn't. And in many ways, I had limited, for all those people who are budding chief execs and think, I actually had quite limited experience of mainstream unitary healthcare board governance. So it very much was learning on the job. And I think having, and I can say this with some confidence, having just said goodbye in real terms to our founding chairman who retired, and his last working day was the 31st of March, chairman of the board. I think I've got a lot to be grateful for in the founding board that we appointed to help me and support me in my journey. And now we welcome a new chair in Steve Ragg to take us through that adult journey.
Wow. I think what I'm getting a sense of you is it's about having the right people around you very much, and the right people delivering the services in the right way. So it's basically all about people, would you say?
I would agree. And there's often talk, isn't there, about a values-driven organisation. And of course, I'm hugely supportive of the principles of values-driven work, compassionate leadership. All of those things are very fundamental to the messages I give. And I have the privilege of, I've made a commitment to always be present at the inductions of every single, if I can. I mean, flood and fire withstanding, I do make every effort to be present at those, in that first initial conversation that you have that sets that psychological contract with the individuals who make the commitment to come and join. But I do genuinely believe it's about people. And it's an easy thing to say is to live your values, but it is genuinely that. It's about how they're lived.
Yeah, totally agree. I think sometimes the challenge to your values, that's when you show the proof that you really do believe in those values, when you get a challenge and someone's trying to stop you from living them.
Yeah, they talk about the best of times, worst of times, don't you? But you talk about trust being a fundamental element of care. So trust between patient and doctor, or patient and nurse, and then trust between employee, line manager, trust between employee and organisation. It's all built on trust. But, you know, you really don't get a sense of trust until you've gone through the worst of times sometimes.
I'm not going to ask you what working through COVID and lockdown was like, because I'm sure that's for a lot of people it's a time that they're trying to not necessarily forget, but they just want to take the learnings from it.
I'd agree. I think we are now in a serious post-pandemic economic and bio, you know, psychosocial world, really. And I think in some ways the actual COVID process itself versus what it's left us with, whether that's, you know, the consequences, good and bad, of hybrid working, the consequences, good and bad, of a really real significant shift in productivity, and the consequences on the workforce, I think are really significant constraints at the moment to us realizing the ambition we have for citizens.
Yeah, definitely would agree. Is there anything else you'd like to share?
Oh no, I thought the questions are great, and it's around this time I should say the comment I made about hair standing on the back of your neck at the beginning of a financial year, because it always brings to the fore an opportunity for me to reflect as to why we're doing what we're doing and why it's relevant and of value. And to thank you too, Heidi, because one of the things that I've been very blessed with along this journey is to retain individuals who've developed a real interest, not just in the social enterprise sector, but in the DNA of the organisations that make up that family. And I'm always grateful, and I don't take for granted the interest that people have in supporting this sector. It is much appreciated and much valued.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I feel a little bit geeky in that. Whenever I get to do any impact work in health and social care, it's like, yay, I love it, I love it. Thank you. There's nothing better than getting spreadsheets of data and all this information.
Absolutely.
And all the stories from the patients and it's just like I just sort of sit. Well, I don't sit. I probably get up and do a little dance in my office, and I'm like, yes, I've got the stuff.
Don't underestimate, because I was in. We have the privilege of running a small team of navigators. They're part of what I call the core business of the social enterprise, and there aren't many of those core areas that run from the beginning in April 2011 to now, but we have one or two much loved services, and one or two of those services have service users that have gone on their journey to become the deliverers of care. And I get the privilege sometimes of sharing, you know, making a cup of coffee with those individuals that were at one point, you know, potential recipients of care, and now look at them. And to, you know, that to me is the why we do it. That's the essence of it.
Yeah, I would totally agree. It's like you can see the transformation with your own eyes, and you know that actually you in some way, whether it's small or much bigger, you've contributed to that. And for me to be able to share those stories for organizations is just like yes.
Yeah. Yeah, and we've got to get over this hump, isn't it? Because I'm sure sometimes in the darker days we wonder about where the world is, what next the world. In fact, I've got really interested in this artificial intelligence conversation and some of the anxieties that the whole AI thing. I'm obsessed with this at the moment, both in terms of what can it bring as added value to the work we do, and also in doing so, what additional, you know, things it might be that as a concern. I think it's a really interesting debate.
Yeah, I'm personally finding it really exciting exploring it and testing it and seeing what it comes up with. And I do think that, you know, for perhaps simple inquiries, having an AI type bot that could give somebody a response with the options for what they could do, it's perhaps really beneficial. But yeah, at some point you need to make sure that there's like it's human centered, in that it doesn't just become a bland message. So it doesn't, I would say you don't want to lose the essence of Spectrum by in an AI but
an AI world. Yeah,
but I think the development of it is actually that what they're saying is that you could actually start to humanize it a bit and make it sound like your organization, and like the tone and things. You can teach the newer versions to do that kind of stuff. So I think that some of the stuff that I'm always like, I repeat the same thing 20 times because I get asked the same question. That yes. kind of stuff it could be really effective for. Whereas where it's something that's really personalized and specific, then that's where you probably need a human.
Yeah. What a great webinar that would be to have a variety of different people thinking about this situation, possibly with different levels of knowledge about it and understanding. Teasing some of this out, but I'm really fascinated, and this is yet another example, I think, of what I call them, the natural curveballs that really shift. So COVID was obviously a natural curveball that shifted everything and has created an environment now for which commercial businesses, social enterprises have to operate, but there's more to come, I think. Yeah. And one of the things that I feel in my stage, I did not anticipate, at this phase of my career, I'm not going to go forever, is so many of these natural curveballs in very close succession.
Yeah.
It used to be much further apart.
You had more recovery time between them. Now it just feel like it's just continual. You adjust to one thing and then there's something else to adjust to.
Yeah, fascinating.
Yeah, definitely. Leave the idea of an AI and health webinar with me, because I'm quite interested in how it can help with the impact side of it. So I think that's a great idea.
I would definitely think there'll be takers for that. I'd be signing up for a start. Yeah. Heidi, it's been a great conversation.
Definitely. Brilliant. So where can people find out more about Spectrum Community Health?
Right. So, well, our website, if you go onto www.spectrumhealth, you will find us. We're quite high up on the Google. And actually linking into our website will provide you with lots of other opportunities. So, for example, if you're interested in sexual health, you've got a dedicated site there because there's lots of accessibility. We are on Facebook, Spectrum CIC, Twitter, and LinkedIn, or we've got dedicated websites from Spectrum Sexual Health website. We also have a Spectrum Jobs site as well, and our affiliated charity, Spectrum People, again has dedicated Facebook and Twitter pages. So those are how you can get in contact.
Lovely, brilliant. So I'm sure lots of people will be on the job site wanting to work with you after finding out about all the fantastic work that you're doing. So you'll be growing your workforce, hopefully. But thank you, Linda. It's been really lovely catching up with you and finding out more about what you've been up to. And congratulations on the 12th birthday.
Oh, thank you so much, Heidi. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Make an Impact podcast with me, Heidi Fisher.
Why does everyone have to make impact measurement and management so complicated? Well, they don't. Heidi Fisher and her social enterprise, Make an Impact Community Interest Company, can demystify it. Make an Impact provides a range of integrated and bespoke services, removing the confusion around social impact measurement, reporting and management, plus producing social impact and SROI reports. So get in touch if you'd like help with your impact measurement, management, developing impact-led strategies to maximise your social impact, and developing products, services and sustainable sources of income to grow your organisation too. Visit makeanimpactcic.co.uk, and thanks for listening.